stomach dropped as I stared up at Hawk. Had he said something? Gods, the options were truly limitless, and none of them were good. Stomach churning as if I'd swallowed spoiled milk, I managed to plaster a smile on my face as I rose from the chair. "I'll await you in your chambers," Tawny said, and I nodded. Hawk waited until I was past him before falling in step slightly behind me, a position that allowed him to react to threats from the front and back. I led us out into the hall, where shimmering white and gold tapestries hung from the walls, and servants in maroon gowns and tunics scurried, carrying out various tasks that kept the large household running. He didn't lead me toward the banquet hall. He aimed for the staircase, and my stomach sank even further. We crossed the foyer and had neared the foot of the wide stairs before he asked, "Are you all right?" I nodded. "Both you and your maid seemed disturbed by the summons." "Tawny's not a maid," I blurted out, and then immediately cursed up a storm in my mind. It was silly to have tried not to speak, but it would have been better for it to have occurred when we weren't in the foyer, surrounded by any number of people, and I would have liked to have lasted at least an entire day. I braced myself as I snuck a peek at him. He stared, expression utterly unreadable. If he recognized my voice, he showed no sign whatsoever. That strange mixture of disappointment and relief hit me once more as I stared straight ahead. Did he seriously not know it had been me in that room? Then again, should I be surprised? He'd believed that I'd been Britta at first, and had no problem continuing on when he realized I wasn't her. Who knew how many random women he... "Is she not?" he queried. "She may be a lady in wait, but I was advised that she was duty-bound to be your lady's maid, your companion." "She is, but she's not." I glanced over at him as the stone staircase curved. One hand rested on the hilt of the sword at his waist. She was duty-bound to be my companion. "It doesn't matter. Nothing is wrong." He looked over at me then. Well, he looked down at me, even though I was a step higher than he was. He was still taller, which seemed unfair. One dark brow rose, his gaze questioning. "What?" I asked, heart seizing as I lifted my foot, but not high enough. I tripped. Hawk reacted fast, curving his hand above my elbow, steadying me. Embarrassment flooded my system as I muttered, "Thank you." "No insincere thanks are required or needed. It's my duty to keep you safe." He paused. "Even from treacherous staircases." I took a deep, even breath. My gratitude was not insincere. "My apologies, then." I didn't have to look at him to know he was grinning, and I'd bet that stupid dimple was gracing the world with its presence. He fell quiet then, and we reached the third floor landing in silence. One hall led to the old wing, to my chambers and many of the household staff. To the left was the newer wing. Stomach full of tiny lead balls, I turned left. My mind was now so fixated on what awaited me that I wasn't all that focused on Hawk's apparent lack of recognition or what it meant if he did recognize it was me and just wasn't saying anything. Hawk reached the wide wooden doors at the end of the hall, his arm brushing my shoulder as he opened one side. He waited until I had entered the narrow spiral staircase. Sunlight poured in through the numerous oval-shaped windows.
"Watch your step. You trip and fall here, you're likely to take me out on your way down."
I huffed. "I won't trip."
"But you just did."
"That was a rarity."
"Well then, I feel honored that I bore witness to it."
I was glad he couldn't see my face then, and not out of fear of recognition, but because I was sure my eyes were so wide they took up my entire upper face. He was speaking to me in a way no other guard did, besides Victor. Not even Rylan had been so familiar. It was as if we had known each other for years instead of hours. Or days, whatever. The comfortable way he was talking to me was disconcerting. He eased past me, reaching the entryway to the fourth floor.
I've seen you before, you know.
My breath hitched, and only by the grace of the gods did I not trip again.
I've seen you on the lower balconies.
Holding open the door, he gestured for me to enter.
Watching me train.
Heat blasted my cheeks. That had not been what I'd expected him to say.
I wasn't watching you, I was taking in the fresh air, waiting for your lady's maid, who is not a maid.
Hawk caught my arm as I walked past him, stopping me. He lowered his head until his lips were mere inches from my veil-covered ear and whispered,
Perhaps I was mistaken, and it wasn't you.
Surrounded by the earthy, woodsy scent of him, my breath caught. We were nowhere near as close as we were the night of the Red Pearl, but if I tilted my head to the left just a few inches, his mouth would touch mine. The curling motion inside me returned, settling even lower in my stomach this time. You are mistaken. He let go of my arm, and when I looked up, I saw that the corner of his lips was tipped up. My heart was doing funny, strange things in my chest as I stepped into the airy hall, my pulse thrumming. Two royal guards were stationed outside the private quarters of the Duke and Duchess. There were several rooms on the floor used for greeting various members of the house and court. Both had their own spaces and suites that connected to bedchambers. But based on where the royal guards stood, I knew the Duke was in the main suite. Unease returned, slithering through my veins. For a brief moment, I'd forgotten about why I could have been summoned.
Penelope,
Hawk said from behind me. Only then did I realize two things. One, I'd come to a complete standstill in the hall, and I was sure that seemed odd to him. And secondly, he had called me by my name twice now, instead of Maiden. He wasn't Victor. He wasn't Tawny, both of whom only called me by my name when we were alone. I knew I should correct his use of my given name, but I couldn't. I didn't want to. And that frightened me as much as what awaited me in the Duke's office. Taking a deep breath, I clasped my hands together as I straightened my shoulders and started forward. The royal guards avoided eye contact as they bowed upon our approach. The dark-skinned one stepped aside, his hand on the door. He started to open it. For some reason, I looked back at Hawk. Why? I had no idea.
I'll wait for you here, he assured.
I nodded and then faced forward again, forcing one foot in front of the other, telling myself that I was getting worked up over nothing. Stepping into the suite, the first thing I noticed was that the curtains had been drawn. The soft glow of several oil lamps seemed to be absorbed by the dark wood paneling and the furniture, fashioned from mahogany and crimson-hued velvet. My gaze fell to the large desk, and then the credenza behind it, where several crystal bottles of various sizes were full of amber liquor. Then I saw him. The Duke sat on the settee, one booted foot resting on the table before him, a glass of liquor in his hand. Chills swept through me as he looked over at me with eyes so dark, the pupil was almost indistinguishable. It made me think that when I next saw Ian, his eyes would no longer be green like mine. They'd be like the Duke's, pitch black, bottomless. But would they be as chilling? I suddenly realized that the Duke wasn't alone. Across from him was Lord Mazine, seated in an arrogant sprawl. He held no drink in his hands, but his fingers tapped idly on his bent knee. There was a smirk on his well-formed lips, and every instinct in me screamed that I needed to run because there was no fighting what was coming. The door clicked shut behind me, causing me to jump a little. I hated the response, hoping that the Duke hadn't seen it, and knowing that he had when I saw him smile. Tierman rose from the settee in one fluid, boneless movement.
Penelope, I am so incredibly disappointed in you.
Chapter 13. Cold to my very core, I drew in a short, measured breath as I watched him take a drink from his glass. I knew I had to choose my words carefully. It wouldn't change what was to come, but it could determine the severity. "I'm sorry to have disappointed you," I started.
Do you even know what you have done that has disappointed me?"
Muscles in my shoulders stiffened, and my gaze darted from the silent lord to the corner of the suite, where several narrow pieces of reddish-brown wood were propped against a bookcase. They were fashioned from a tree that grew within the Blood Forest. When I looked back at Lord Mazin, I saw that he was smiling. I was beginning to think that he had reported something back to the Duke, but if I was wrong about that, it would only add to my problems. And Lord Mazin knew this as he watched me. He gave no indication of the role he played in this, even if his part was only to bear witness. He rarely spoke when he attended these lessons. While his silence would typically give me relief, it only heightened my anxiety now. I forced the next words out even though they rolled off my tongue all wrong. "I don't, but I'm sure whatever it is, I'm at fault. You're never disappointed in me without cause." That was so not true. There seemed to be times when the way I walked or how I cut my food at supper was a disappointment to the Duke. I was sure how many breaths I took in a minute could be of offense to him.
"You're right. I wouldn't be disappointed for no reason at all," he agreed. "But this time, I find myself blindsided by what I've been told."
My stomach turned over as sweat dotted my brow. Dear gods, had he learned of my time at the Red Pearl? I'd feared that Hawk would say something, had obsessed and stressed over it. A part of me must not have wanted to believe it was possible, though, because the ripe feeling of betrayal tasted like spoiled food in the back of my throat. Hawk most likely had no idea what went down in this room, but he had to have known there would be consequences, wouldn't he? He probably thought I'd receive nothing more than a stern lecture. After all, I was the maiden, the chosen. I would receive a dressing down, but I doubted Hawk had any idea that the Duke's lessons were not normal. Tierman took a step toward me, and all my muscles tensed up.
"Remove your veil, Penelope."
I hesitated for only the span of a few heartbeats. Even though it was not uncommon for the Duke or the Duchess to request such a thing while in their presence, they didn't like speaking to half a face. I couldn't blame them, but normally the Duke made me keep it on when Lord Mazin was present.
"You do not want to test my patience."
His grip had tightened on his glass. "I'm sorry, it's just that we are not alone, and the gods forbade me from showing my face," I said, knowing full well that I'd done this before, but in situations vastly different.
"The gods will not find fault in today's proceedings,"
the Duke interrupted. "Of course not." Willing my hands steady, I lifted them and undid the fine clasps of the veil near my ears. The headdress immediately loosened. Keeping my gaze lowered, as I knew he preferred, I slipped it off, over where my hair had been bound in a simple knot at the nape of my neck. My exposed cheeks and brows prickled. Tierman came forward, taking the veil from me and placing it aside. I clasped my hands and waited. I hated doing so, but I waited.
"Lift your eyes,"
he demanded softly. And I did just that. His ebony gaze slowly tracked over my features, inch by inch, missing nothing, not even the wisps of burnt copper hair that I could feel curling against my temple.
His perusal lasted an eternity. You grow more beautiful each time I see you.
Thank you, Your Grace, I murmured, revulsion bubbling up in my stomach. I knew what was coming next. The tips of his fingers pressed into the skin under my chin, tilting my head to the left and then to the right. He clucked his tongue.
Such a shame.
And there it was. I said nothing as my focus shifted to the large oil painting of the temples, where veiled women knelt before a being who was so bright he rivaled the moon.
What do you think, Bran?
He asked of the Lord.
As you said, such a shame.
I didn't give a craven's ass what Lord Mazeen thought.
The other scars are easy to hide, but this?
The Duke sighed almost sympathetically.
There will come a time when there will be no veil to hide this unfortunate flaw.
I swallowed, resisting the urge to pull away when his fingers left my chin to trail down the two ragged indentations that started at my left temple and continued downward, skirting my eye, to end just beside my nose.
Do you know what that new guard of hers said?
The Lord didn't speak, but I imagined he shook his head no.
He said she was beautiful,
the Duke answered.
Half of her is truly stunning.
There was a pause.
You look so much like your mother.
My gaze flew to his in shock. He knew my mother? He'd never, not once, mentioned that before. You knew her? His eyes met mine, and it was hard to stare into the never-ending darkness.
I did. She was special.
Before I could even question that, he said,
You do realize that the guard wouldn't have said otherwise. Wouldn't have spoken the truth.
I flinched as my chest hollowed. Having spotted the reaction, the Duke's smile returned.
I suppose it's some small blessing. The damage to your face could have been far worse.
The damage could have included a missing eye, or worse, death. But I didn't say that. My gaze shifted back to the painting, wondering how his words could still sting after all these years. When I was younger, they'd hurt. His words had cut deep. But the last couple of years, there'd been nothing but numb resignation. The scars were not something I could change. I knew that. But today, they sliced through me, as they had when I was 13.
You do have such pretty eyes.
He removed his fingers from the scars and pressed one to my lower lip.
And a well-formed mouth.
He paused, and I swore I could feel his gaze lower and linger.
Most will find your body pleasing.
Bile clogged my throat and crawled across my skin like thousands of spiders. Only by sheer will was I able to hold myself completely still.
For some men, those things will be enough.
Tierman dragged his finger across my bottom lip before lowering his hand.
Priestess Analia came to see me this morning.
Wait, what? My heart started to slow as confusion surfaced. The priestess? What could she possibly have to say about me?
Do you not have anything to add?
Tierman asked, raising one pale brow. No, I'm sorry. I shook my head. I don't know what Priestess Analia would have to say. I saw her last a week ago in the second floor parlor and all seemed fine.
I'm sure it did, since you only spent half an hour there before leaving unexpectedly, he said. I was advised you didn't once pick up your embroidery set, nor did you engage in any conversation with the priestesses.
Irritation flared, but I knew better than to cave to it. Besides, if this was what he was upset over, it was far better than what I'd feared. My mind was occupied with my upcoming rite, I lied. The real reason I didn't engage in their conversation was because the women spent the entire time speaking poorly of the ladies in wait and how they were not deserving of the god's blessing. I must have been daydreaming.
I'm sure you're very excited about the rite. And if this had just been one situation, I would have easily overlooked your poor conduct. He was lying. The Duke never overlooked any perceived poor conduct. But I've learned that you were just in the atrium, he continued, and my shoulders slumped. Yes, I was. I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to be, I said. And that wasn't a lie. I don't go often, but spending time in the atrium is not the issue, and you're smart enough to know that. Don't play coy with me. I opened my mouth and then closed it. You were speaking with two of the ladies in wait, he continued. You know that is not allowed. Knowing this was coming, I remained silent. I just hadn't realized he would find out so quickly. Someone must have been watching. Perhaps his steward or one of the other royal guards. Do you have nothing to say? He asked. Dipping my chin, I stared at the floor. I could tell him the truth, that I hadn't said more than one sentence to the ladies, and that this was, as far as I knew, the first time they'd visited the atrium. It wouldn't matter, though. The truth didn't work with the Duke. Such a demure maiden, the Lord murmured. I could practically feel my tongue sharpen, but I softened my words as much as I could. I'm sorry. I should have left when they entered, but I didn't.
And why not?
I was curious. They were talking about the upcoming rite, I told him, looking up.
I'm not surprised to hear that. You were always an active child with a curious mind that flicked from one thing to the next. Something I've warned the Duchess you wouldn't grow out of easily.
He continued, his features turning taut, a glint of anticipation forming in his eyes.
Priestess Analia also informed me that she fears your relationship with your lady's maid has become far too familiar.
My spine stiffened as he turned, straightening the veil he'd draped over a chair. The back of my skull tingled as I said, Tawny has been a wonderful lady's maid, and if my kindness and gratefulness has been mistaken for anything else, then I apologize. He slid a long look in my direction.
I know it may be hard to keep boundaries with someone you spend so much time with, but a maiden does not seek intimacies of the heart or the mind with those who serve them. Not even those who are to become members of the court. You must never forget that you are not like them. You were chosen by the gods at birth, and they are chosen at their right. You will never be equals. You will never be friends.
The words I forced past my lips scratched at my heart. I understand. Tierman took another drink. How much had he already consumed? My heart rate tripled. Once, when I'd upset the Duke, his lesson had been carried out after he'd indulged in what I'd heard the guards call Red Ruin, a liquor brewed in the Cliffs of Hoar. The Lord had been with him then. That was the time he'd struck me, and it had taken several days before I'd been able to resume training with Victor.
I don't think you do.
His tone hardened.
You were chosen at birth, Penelope. Only one other has ever been chosen by the gods.
It was why the Dark One sent the Craven after your family. It was why your parents were slaughtered. I flinched once more, my stomach hollowing.
That hurts, doesn't it? But it's the truth. That should have been the only lesson you ever needed.
Placing his glass on the table, he faced me while the Lord unfolded his legs.
But between your lack of awareness regarding overstepping boundaries, your lack of attention with Priestess Analia, your blatant disregard today for what is expected of you, and,
he drew the word out, enjoying the moment,
the attitude you displayed yesterday toward me. What, you thought I wouldn't address your behavior while we discussed Ryan's replacement?
The air I inhaled did nothing to inflate my lungs.
That wasn't his name.
You stared back at me as if you wished to do me physical harm.
He chuckled, amused by the idea that I could do such a thing.
The meeting would have ended vastly different if others had not been present, and we weren't there to discuss Hawk replacing Ryan.
Rylan! I snapped. His name is Rylan, not Ryan.
There it is!
Lord Mazeen echoed the words he'd spoken the night Melissa had been found. He chuckled.
Not so demure now.
I ignored him. Tierman cocked his head.
You mean his name was Rylan?
I sucked in air that seemed to go nowhere.
And does it really matter? He was just a royal guard. He would have been honored that I even thought of him.
Now I truly wanted to inflict physical harm.
Either way, you just proved that I must double my attempts to strengthen my commitment to make you more than ready for your ascension. Apparently, I've been too easy on you.
The gleam in his eyes brightened.
Unfortunately, that means you require yet another lesson. Hopefully, it will be your last. But somehow, I doubt it.
My fingers spasmed where I twisted them. Anger rose so swiftly, I was surprised that I didn't breathe fire when I exhaled. That was the last thing Tierman hoped for. If he couldn't find a reason to give me a lesson, then he'd have a complete breakdown. Yes, I bit out the word, my control slipping. Hopefully. He cut me a sharp look, and a long, tense moment passed.
I believe 4 lashes should suffice.
Before I could remind myself who I was, what Tierman was, fury burned through my blood, seizing control. Nothing he'd taken me to task for mattered. None of that had anything to do with the dissenters and the Dark One being behind my attempted abduction and Rylan's murder. The gods blessed the Ascended with near immortality and unfathomable strength, and they spent their time worrying about who I was speaking to? I couldn't stop myself. Are you sure that's enough? I wouldn't want you to feel as if you haven't done enough. His gaze hardened.
How does 7 sound?
Apprehension flickered through me, but I'd received 10 before.
I see that number agrees with you, he said. What do you think, Bran?
I think that is sufficient.
There was no mistaking the eagerness in his tone. The Duke looked back to me.
You know where to go.
Holding my chin high, it took everything in me to walk past him and not lay him flat on his back. That was the worst part as I walked to the shiny, cleared surface of his desk. The Ascended were stronger than even the most skilled guard, but neither Tierman nor Mazeen had raised a hand in combat since the War of 2 Kings. I could easily knock him flat on his back.
But then what?
There'd be more lessons, and word would make its way back to Queen Ilyana. She'd be disappointed, genuinely so. And unlike the Duke, I cared about what the Queen thought and felt. Not because I was her favorite, but because it had been she who had taken care of me as a wounded, terrified child. Her hands had changed my bandages and held me when I screamed and cried for my mother and father. And it was Queen Ilyana who had sat with me when I could not sleep, terrified of the dark. She'd done things no queen needed to do, without her caring for me as my own mother would have. I would have been lost in a way I doubted I could ever have recovered from. I stopped in front of the desk, hands shaking with barely leashed rage. I believed in my heart of hearts that if Queen Ilyana knew what the Duke did in this room, things would not end well for the Ascended. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the Lord lean forward as Tierman picked up the red, narrow cane, smoothing his hand down its length. But the Queen wouldn't know. Letters sent to the capital were always read, and I wouldn't see her until I returned. But then?
Then?
I would tell her everything. Because if he did this to me, I was sure he did this to others as well, even if no one ever spoke of it. He came to stand beside me, that glint of eagerness now a shine in his eyes.
You're not ready, Penelope. You should know better by this point.
Clamping my jaw shut, I looked away as I lifted my hands to the row of buttons. My fingers only trembled once, and then stilled, as I undid the bodice, all too aware that Mazin had picked his seat with knowledge of what was to come. He had an unobstructed view. The Duke remained at my side, watching as the bodice of my gown gaped, revealing the all-too-thin undergarment underneath. Both slipped down my shoulders until the clothing pooled at my waist. Cool air washed over my back and chest, and I wanted to stand there as if I was wholly unaffected by the entire ordeal. Wished I could be strong and brave and unmoved. I didn't want them to see how humiliating this was, how much it bothered me to be seen like this, and not by someone of my choosing, someone worthy. But I couldn't. Cheeks burning and eyes stinging, I folded an arm over my chest.
This is for your own good,
Tierman spoke, his voice going dark and rough as he walked behind me.
This is a necessary lesson, Penelope, to ensure that you take your preparations seriously and are committed to them, so you do not dishonor the gods.
He almost sounded like he believed what he said, as if he weren't doing this simply because it excited him to inflict pain. But I knew better. I knew what Mazin would do if he could, and I'd seen the look in the Duke's eyes. I saw it far too many times before when I made the mistake of looking. The kind of look that told me if I wasn't the maiden, he would inflict a different kind of pain. Just like I knew Mazin would. I couldn't suppress the shudder that followed that thought. A moment later, I felt his hand on my bare shoulder, and everything in me recoiled. It wasn't just the touch of his too cold skin against mine, but it was also what I didn't feel. I felt nothing. No faint trace of anguish that all people carried within them, no matter how long ago the source of the hurt that had inflicted its damage. There was no pain of any kind, and it was that way for every ascended. While that should bring me some sort of relief that I wouldn't pick up on pain, it only left me with the feeling of crawling skin. It was a reminder of how different the ascended were from mortals, what the blessing of the gods did.
Brace yourself, Penelope.
I planted a palm on the desk. The room was silent, except for the sound of the Lord's deep breaths. And then I heard the soft whistle of the cane cutting through the air a second before it struck my lower back. My entire body jerked as fiery pain rippled across my skin. The first strike was always a shock, no matter how many times it had happened before, or that I knew what was coming. Another strike landed across my shoulders, pushing out a rough burst of air as fire swept across them. Five more. Another blow landed, and my body trembled as I lifted my gaze. I will not make a sound. I will not make a sound. My hips knocked against the desk with the next hit. The settee creaked as Lord Mazin rose. Skin burning, I bit down on my lip until I tasted blood. I stared through the haze of tears at the painting of the veiled worshippers, wondering how horrible the Atlanteans must have been for men like the Duke of Macedonia and Lord Mazin to receive the blessing of ascension from the gods. Chapter 14. The gods had granted me one small favor when I left the Duke's suite. Hawk hadn't been waiting for me, and that had been a blessing. I had no idea how I could have hidden what had happened. Instead, it was Victor who stood silently by the two royal guards.
Neither looked at me as I stepped into the hall, skin pale and covered in a sheen of cold sweat. Did they know what had happened in the Duke's chamber? I hadn't made a sound, not even when Lord Mazine had come to stand beside the desk and pulled my arm away from my chest to place it beside my other. Not even when the sixth and seventh blows had felt like lightning streaking across my back, and Mazine had watched every lash absorbed by my body with eager eyes. If the guards were aware, there was nothing I could do about that, or the bitter bite of shame that somehow burned worse than my back. But Victor knew. The knowledge was in the deep lines bracketing his mouth as we walked toward the staircase, each step tugging at the inflamed skin. He waited until the stairwell door closed behind us and then stopped on the landing, concern settling into his light blue eyes as he stared down at me. How bad is it? My hands trembled as I pressed them against the skirt of my gown. I'm fine. I just need to rest.
Fine.
His sun-kissed cheeks mottled. Your breathing is rapid, and you're walking as if each step is a challenge. You have no reason to pretend with me. I truly didn't, but admitting how bad it was felt like I was giving Tierman what he wanted. It could have been worse. Victor's nostrils flared.
It shouldn't happen at all. I couldn't argue with that. Did he break your skin? He demanded.
No, there are just welts.
Just welts?
His laugh was harsh and without humor. You speak as if they are nothing more than scratches. Why were you punished this time? Does he need a reason?
My smile was tired and felt brittle, as if it would crack my entire face.
He was upset over my lack of commitment to my time spent with the priestess. And today, while I was in the atrium, two ladies in wait showed up. He was not pleased about that.
How is that your fault?
Does it need to be my fault? Victor stared at me, struck silent for a moment.
So this is why he took the cane to you?
I nodded, gaze falling to the nearest oval-shaped window. The sun had drifted away while I'd been in the suite, the stairwell not nearly as bright and airy as it had been. And he didn't like my attitude during the meeting yesterday. It's not nearly the most minor offense he has punished me for.
This is why I said you must be careful, Poppy. If he lashes you for being in a room while others walk in, what do you think he would do if he learned of your little adventures?
Or if he learned that I've been training like a guard for years?
My shoulders tightened, the movement pulling at my skin.
I'd be caned, of course, probably more than seven lashes.
Victor's golden skin paled.
He may petition the queen to find me unworthy, and maybe the gods already do, I continued. But as you've said before, my ascension will happen no matter what I do. You, though? What would happen to you, Victor, if it were ever discovered that you've been training me?
It doesn't matter what they may or may not do.
There wasn't a second of hesitation there.
The risk is worth it. Knowing you can protect yourself, I would gladly take whatever punishment I received. And I wouldn't regret what I've done.
I lifted my chin, holding his gaze. And being able to defend my home, those I cared for, and my life is worth the risk of whatever may happen. He was quiet for a moment, and then his wintry blue eyes closed.
He might have been thinking of a prayer for patience, something I'd known him to do many times before.
That brought another small smile to my lips. I'm careful, Victor.
Being careful doesn't seem to matter. His eyes opened. I welcome the idea of the queen summoning you to the capital sooner rather than later.
I shivered as I started down the stairs, because then I couldn't be subjected to the duke's lessons.
Exactly.
That was something to look forward to, especially since I planned on telling the queen everything.
Was he alone?
I asked the guards, but they acted as if they had no idea who was in the room with him, he said.
They always knew who was in with the Duke. They just hadn't wanted Victor to know, and I didn't either. He was alone.
He didn't answer, and I wasn't sure if that meant he believed me or not. I decided it was time to change the subject.
How did you know where I was?
Victor moved only a step behind me. Hawk sent one of the Duke's stewards for me. He was concerned about you.
My heart skipped a beat. Over what?
He said that both you and Tawny appeared distressed over the Duke's summons,
Victor explained.
He thought I could explain why.
And did you?
I told him there was nothing to be worried about, and that I would remain as your escort for the rest of the day.
Victor's brow wrinkled as he casually took my arm, lending me his support.
He wasn't exactly receptive, so I had to remind him that I was higher ranking than him.
My lips twitched at that.
I'm sure that went over well.
As well as an avalanche.
We rounded the next floor. The knowledge that I was getting closer to my bed, keeping me going as I mulled over what Hawk had done.
He is quite observant, isn't he? And intuitive.
Yes,
Victor sighed, obviously thinking that wasn't a good thing.
Yes, he is.
3 dozen torches blazed beyond the rise, their flames a beacon of light in the vast darkness. A promise of safety to the slumbering city. I cast a longing look toward the bed, letting out a tired sigh as I twisted the ends of my braid. Nightmares from a different night had driven me from sleep, leaving my skin slick with a cold sweat and my heart thrumming like a rabbit caught in a snare. Luckily, I hadn't woken Tawny with my screams. She'd been up late the past 2 nights. The first night, she'd spent a good part of the evening doing everything possible to make sure the welts healed. And last night, she'd been summoned by the mistress to assist with preparations for the rite. Tawny had used a concoction the healers swore by, and which the guards frequently used for their numerous injuries, rubbing the mixture of pine and sage-scented arnica and honey onto the inflamed skin of my back. It was the same stuff the healer had used the night of the abduction. The ointment had cooled my skin and eased the ache almost immediately. Still, we knew from previous experience that it had to be applied nearly every other hour to achieve the desired effect. And it had worked. By yesterday evening, there was only a twinge of discomfort, even though the skin was still pinker than normal. I hadn't been making light of what had occurred when I told Victor and then Tawny that it could have been worse. The welts would most likely be gone by the morning, and there'd be little, if any, pain. I was lucky I always healed quickly, and even luckier that Tierman hadn't been drinking Red Ruin the afternoon of my summons. The Duke had known my mother? How? As far as I knew, she had never been to Macedonia, so that had to mean that the Duke had met her in the capital. It was rare for the Ascended to travel, especially such a great distance, but they'd obviously met. There had been such a strange look in Tierman's face when he spoke of her. Nostalgia mixed with what? Anger, perhaps? Disappointment? Had whatever interactions he'd had with her caused the way he behaved toward me? Or was I just looking for a reason for his treatment, as if there had to be something to explain his cruelty? There wasn't a lot I knew about life, but I knew that sometimes there was no reason. A person, whether ascended or not, was who they were, with no explanation. Sighing, I shifted my weight from foot to foot. I'd been holed up in my room the last 2 days, mainly because rest ensured that the ointment worked as fast as possible. And also because I was avoiding, well, everyone, but especially Hawk.
I hadn't seen him since I'd stepped into the Duke's private office, and knowing that he'd sensed that something was wrong left me with a gurgling feeling of anxiety and embarrassment, even though what Tierman had done wasn't my fault. I just didn't want Hawk to figure out that something was wrong, and he was observant enough to do so. Granted, staying in my room for 2 days would probably also send up a red flag, but at least he hadn't borne witness to how carefully I had to move while my back healed. I didn't want Hawk to see me as weak, even though as the maiden he would expect exactly that. And maybe it had to do with the weird mix of relief and disappointment I felt every time he showed no recognition that he'd met me at the Pearl. Dragging my gaze from the bed, I returned to watching the torches beyond the rise. The fires were calm tonight, as they had been for several nights. But when the flames danced like mad spirits driven by the winds of twilight, it meant the mist would not be far behind, and sweeping, terrible death followed the thick white fog. Absently, my hand slipped through the thin folds of the dressing gown to the bone handle of the dagger strapped to my thigh. My fingers curled around the cool hilt, reminding me that I would be ready if and when the rise fell. Just as I would be ready if the Dark One tried to come for me again. My hand drifted from the handle to a few inches above my knee, brushing over the patch of uneven skin on my inner thigh. Hawk had come so incredibly close to touching the scar. What would he have done if he had? Would he have jerked his hand away? Or pretended as if he hadn't felt anything? I pulled my hand away. I wasn't going to think about that. I curled my fingers into a fist as I cut off those thoughts. There was no reason to go down that road. Nothing good would come from doing so. It didn't matter if he recognized me or not, if I was just one of many girls he'd kissed in dimly lit rooms. It also didn't matter if he'd gone back to the Pearl, like he'd promised. I shook my head, as if I could scatter my thoughts. But it didn't work. One thing I'd discovered over the last 2 days of near isolation was that I could continue telling myself it didn't matter over and over. But it did. Hawk had been my first kiss, even if he didn't know that. Silvery moonlight seeped through the chamber as I crept silently toward the west windows. Placing my fingers on the cool glass, I counted the torches. 12 on the rise, 24 below, all aflame. Good. That was good. I pressed my forehead to the thin glass that did very little to keep the chill from finding its way into the castle. In the west, where Carcedonia was nestled between the Stroud Sea and the Willow Plains, there was no need for glass windows. Summer and spring were eternal there, where autumn and winter forever reigned here. It was one of the things I looked forward to when I returned to the capital. The warmth, the sunshine, the scent of salt and sea, and all the glittering bays and coves. Tawny, who had never seen the beaches, would absolutely love them. A tired grin tugged at my lips. When she had been summoned by one of the mistresses, Tawny had sent me a look that said she might have been happier scrubbing the bathing chambers than spending the evening attempting to please the unappeasable. I often felt the same when it was time to meet with the priestess. I'd rather spend the evening plucking my own body hair from very sensitive areas than spending hours with that dragon of a woman. Perhaps I needed to be better at hiding how I felt when it came to her and the other priestesses. I still couldn't believe she'd gone to the Duke, all because I didn't spend half of my day listening to her and the others complain about everyone else. Wrapping my arms around myself, I wished for what felt like the 100th time that my brother was still in Macedonia. Ian had nightmares too, and if he were still here right now, he'd distract me with silly made-up tales. Did he still have nightmares after his ascension? If not, then wasn't that something else to look forward to? My gaze traveled along the rise, catching sight of a guard patrolling along the top of the wall. I'd rather be out there than in here. The Ascended would be shocked to hear such a thing, as would most others. To even think it, that I, the maiden, the chosen, who would go to the gods, would want to exchange places with a commoner, a guard, would be an affront to not only the Ascended, but also to the gods themselves. All over the kingdom, people would do anything to be in the presence of the gods. I was privileged, no matter what I suffered. But at least, if I were out there on the rise, I could be doing something productive. I'd be protecting the city and all those who enabled me to have such a comfortable life. Instead, I was in here, reaching an all-new height of self-pity, when in reality, my ascension would do more than protect one city. It would ensure the entire future of the kingdom. Wasn't that doing something? I wasn't sure, and I wanted nothing more than to be able to close my eyes and find sleep. But I knew it wouldn't come, not for hours. On nights like this, when I knew sleep would evade me, I caved to the urge to sneak out and explore the silent and dark city until I found places that didn't sleep, spots like the Red Pearl. Unfortunately, that would be the height of stupidity after the attempted abduction. Even I wasn't that reckless, and a flame beyond the rise began to dance, snapping me forward. I pressed both palms to the window, staring at the fire and refusing to blink. "It's nothing," I told the empty room. "It's just a breeze." Another flash moved, and then another, and another. The whole line of torches beyond the wall rippling wildly, spitting sparks as the wind picked up. I took a breath, but it seemed to go nowhere. The one in the middle was the first to be snuffed, sending my heart slamming against my ribs. The others rapidly followed, pitching the land beyond the rise into sudden darkness. I took a step back from the window. Dozens of fiery arrows shot into the air, arcing high above the rise, and then racing downward, slamming into the tinder-filled trenches. A wall of fire erupted, running the entire length of the rise. The flames were no defense against the mist or what came with it. The fire made what was in the fog visible. Returning to the window, I threw the latch and flung it open. Cold air and kind of unearthly silence poured into the chamber as I gripped the stone ledge and leaned out, squinting. Smoke wafted up and weaved through the flames, spilling into the air and onto the ground. Smoke didn't move like that. Smoke didn't creep under the tinder, a thick, murky white against the black of night. Smoke didn't blanket flames, suffocating them until they were extinguished, and all that remained was a heavy, unnatural mist. The mist wasn't empty. It was full of twisted shapes that had once been mortal. Horns blared from all four corners of the rise, shattering the tense quiet. Within seconds, what few lights had shone through the windows went dark. A second call of warning went out, and the entire castle seemed to shudder. Snapping into action, I grabbed the window and latched it into place before I spun around. I'd have roughly 3 minutes, possibly less, before all exits were sealed. I started forward. A moment later, the adjoining door swung open, and Tawny burst in, her white nightgown flowing around her and the mass of brown and gold curls spilling over her shoulders. "No!" Tawny stumbled to a halt, the whites of her wide eyes a stark contrast to her brown skin. "No, Poppy!" Ignoring her, I raced over to the chest, throwing open the heavy lid and rooting around until I found the bow. Rising, I tossed it onto the bed.
"You cannot be planning to go out there," she exclaimed.
"I am."
"Poppy!"
"I will be fine." I situated the quiver along my spine.
"Fine?"
She gaped at me as I turned to her.
"I can't believe I have to point out the obvious, but here I am. You're the maiden, the chosen. You cannot go out there. If they don't kill you, His Grace will if He catches you."
You won't catch me. I snatched up a black hooded cloak and shrugged it on, securing it at my neck and breast. The Duke will be hiding in his room behind a dozen royal guards, if not more, right alongside the Duchess.
The royal guards will come for you.
I retrieved the curved bow by the grip. I'm positive Victor left for the rise the moment he heard the horns.
And Hawk? Their duty is to protect you.
Victor knows I can protect myself, and Hawk won't even know I've left my room. I paused. He doesn't know about the servant's entrance.
You're injured, Poppy. You're back.
My back is almost completely healed. You know that.
And what of the Dark One? What if this is a ploy?
This is no ploy, Tawny. I saw them in the mist, I told her, and her face grayed. And if the Dark One tries to come for me, I will be ready for him too. She followed me as I crossed the room.
Penelope Balfour, stop!
Surprised, I spun around and found her standing right behind me. I have less than 2 minutes, Tawny. I will be trapped in here.
Where it's safe,
she reasoned. I grasped her shoulder with my free hand. If they breach the walls, they will take the city, and they will find a way into the castle. And then there will be no stopping them. That I know. They got to my family. They got to me. I will not sit and wait for that to happen once more. Her eyes frantically searched mine.
But you didn't have the rise to protect you then.
That was true, but nothing is infallible, Tawny. Not even the rise.
And neither are you,
she whispered, her lower lip trembling.
I know.
She drew in a deep breath, her shoulder sagging under my hand.
All right. If anyone comes, I'll tell them you're ill with fright and have locked yourself in the bathing chamber.
I rolled my eyes. Of course you will. I let go of her shoulder. There are several bloodstone daggers in the chest and a sword under the pillows.
Please tell me your head is not resting above a sword every night,
Tawny demanded, voice ringing with disbelief.
No wonder you have nightmares. Only the gods know what kind of bad luck using a sword as a pill.
Tawny, I cut her off before she really got going. If the castle is breached, use the weapons. You know how.
I know.
She did, only because I made her learn in secret, just like Victor had taught me.
The head or the heart?
I nodded.
Be safe, Poppy, please. I'll be so very disappointed if I'm assigned to serve the Duchess, or worse yet, given to the temple in service to the gods. Not that it wouldn't be an honor to serve them.
She tacked on, placing her hand over her heart.
But the whole celibacy thing?
I cracked a grin.
I will return. You'd better, Poppy. I promise.
Giving her a quick kiss on the cheek, I spun and headed for the old servant's door beside the bathing chamber. This was the whole reason I had all but begged and pleaded to be moved to this room in the older, far uglier portion of the castle. These pathways and accesses were no longer used, but they connected to nearly every room in the old part of the stronghold, including the stone bridge that led directly to the southern portion of the rise. Old hinges creaked as I opened the door. The pathways allowed me to move undetected through the castle. Over the last years, I'd used them to meet with Victor in one of the old, unused rooms for training, and it was also how I was able to slip out of the castle without being seen. But most importantly, the old stairs and halls could provide a quick escape if necessary.
Poppy!
Tawny called out, stopping me.
Your face!
Confusion rose for only a moment, and then I realized that my face was unveiled.
Right!
I lifted the heavy hood, tugging it into place before I slipped out into the narrow, winding staircase. Stone slid against metal as thick iron doors rattled and began their descent as I raced down the cracked, uneven stone steps. My slippers weren't the best footwear for such a thing, but there hadn't been time to ferret out the only boots I owned from their hiding place, tucked under the head of the bed. If the maids found them, they would be sure to talk, and eventually, whatever they said would make its way to someone. I had less than a minute to get out. Dust and small rocks drifted from above as the castle continued to tremble. Moonlight broke through the cracked, dusty windows as I rounded the final set of steps, slipping over the bottom two and all but sliding out into the empty pantry. The movement caused nothing more than a dull flare of pain where the welts were healing. Thrusting the bow into the folds of the cloak, I darted into the chaotic kitchen where servants clamored for access to the hidden safe rooms that doubled as food storage. Guards rushed for the main entrance, where the largest shield would be locking into place within seconds. No one paid me any mind as I ran for the back hall, where one of the iron doors was already halfway down. Spitting out a curse that Victor would have turned red at, and Rylan would have... he would have smiled at if he were still here, I picked up speed and then dipped. The silk and satin slippers aided in the descent. I slid under the door, nearly losing my balance as I skidded out into the night air. The heavy doorway groaned as it settled into place. I backed away and then turned, my lips curving into a broad smile Tawny would have found not only concerning, but also disturbing. I'd made it to the bridge. Not wasting time, I raced across the narrow walk high above the houses and shops. I didn't dare look to my sides as there was no railing. One slip and, well, what was in the mist would no longer be a concern. Reaching the wider ledge of the rise, I tossed the bow onto the top and then hoisted myself up. The healing skin of my back stretched, causing me to wince as the cloak and the gown parted, revealing nearly the entire length of my leg. I yearned for the thin breeches often worn under certain styles of gowns, but there hadn't been enough time. I grasped the bow and started toward the western wall, arriving as the mist seemed to become a solid mass, carrying with it the scent of metal and decay. Ahead, archers waited in their nests of stone, like birds of prey, their bows and arrows ready. I knew not to get too close, as a guard from the rise would surely notice and ask questions. And while Tawny had exaggerated the killing me part, I would face yet another lesson from the Duke. I cast a quick look around. The city had gone completely quiet and dark, except for the temples. Their flames were never extinguished. Tearing my gaze from them and the unsettled feeling they often roused, I searched for an empty battlement until I found one. If it were to be manned by a guard, someone would already be in it. Keeping close to the shadows, clinging to the walls, I eased inside the enclosure. My smile returned when I saw several quivers resting near the short ladder. Perfect. Bloodstone arrows, their shafts made of wood from the Blood Forest, were not easy to come by when you were a maiden who wasn't supposed to have a need for them. Grabbing several of the quivers, I scurried up the ladder. Partially hidden behind the stone wall, I set the quivers beside me and pulled out an arrow. A sound came then, raising the hairs all over my body. It started as a low howl, reminding me of the wind during the coldest part of winter. But the moaning gave way to shrill shrieks. Goosebumps pimpled my skin, and my stomach twisted with nausea even as I knocked an arrow. I would never forget that sound. It haunted my dreams, forcing me awake night after night. Shouts erupted from the ground, a call to fire. Sucking in a breath of awe, I watched the sky light up with burning arrows. They ripped through the encroaching mist as fires sprang to life once more, all around the rise, turning the night to silvery dusk. Guards waited on foot in front of the rise, their black armor making them nearly indistinguishable as I searched out the familiar white cape of a royal guard. There, I found pale blonde hair and a weathered face the color of sand. My heart skipped a beat. Toward the center stood Victor, I expected to see him where death now gathered, but a knot of fear still gathered in my breast. Victor was the bravest man I knew. What about Hawk? I had no idea if he was in the castle, stationed outside my door, believing I was inside, or on the rise. Or, like Victor, perhaps he was beyond it. The knot expanded, but I couldn't let it grab hold of me. Keeping an eye on Victor, I curled my fingers around the string, pulling back as he donned his helmet. Another volley of arrows went up, these reaching farther. When they cut through the mist, I heard the screams. And then I saw them, their pale bodies a milky white, leached of all color, their faces sunken and hollow, eyes burning like fiery coal, mouths open wide, revealing two sets of jagged, serrated teeth. Their fingers were elongated into claws, and both their fangs and their claws could flay skin like the softest butter. I had the scars to prove it. They were what Marlowe and Ridley would have become if their lives hadn't been ended before it was too late. They poured out of the mist, the source of my nightmares, the creatures sent by the Dark One over a decade ago to rob my brother and me of our parents in a blood-soaked massacre. They were the evil ones who'd nearly killed me before my 6th birthday, clawing and biting in a frenzy of bloodlust. The Kraven were here. Chapter 15. And now, they swarmed the guards outside the rise, crashing into them in a wave that knew no fear of death. Screams of pain and terror tore through the night, and my breath seized. In a matter of seconds, I lost sight of Victor. "No," I whispered, fingers trembling around the string. "Where was he? He couldn't have fallen. Not that quickly. Not Victor." I found him, holding his ground as he cleaved his sword through the air, slicing off the head of a Kraven as another launched itself at him. He spun, narrowly avoiding a swipe that would have torn through his breastplate. There was no time for relief. My gaze shifted as an archer's bloodstone arrow slammed into the head of a Kraven, knocking it backward. Dark, inky blood spewed out of the back of its skull. I focused on another Kraven, calming my breath until it was deep and slow like Victor had taught me. Years of training steadied my hand, so did experience. This wasn't the first time I had aided the guards on the rise. "Once your fingers take hold of the string, the world around you must cease to exist." Victor's instructions echoed in my mind. "It's just you, the pull of the string, and your aim. Nothing else matters." And that was all it could be. Trusting my aim, I released an arrow. It flew through the air, striking a Kraven in the heart. I knocked another, before what was once someone's child or parent even hit the ground. I found another, a Kraven who had a guard on its back, tearing at its armor. I let the bowstring go, smiling when the projectile burst through the Kraven's head. Loading the next arrow, I caught sight of Victor, his sword slick with dark blood, as he shoved it deep into a Kraven's stomach and then drew it upward with a shout. A Kraven rushed Victor from behind as he yanked the sword out. I pulled back the string. The bolt sliced through the air, catching the creature in the back of its patchy-haired skull. The thing fell forward, dead before it even hit the ground. Victor's head whipped around, and I swore he looked straight at me, knew who had sent down that arrow. And although I couldn't see his face, I knew he wore the expression he always did when he was proud, yet irritated. Grinning, I readied another arrow, and for what felt like a small eternity, I lost myself to the killing, taking down one Kraven after another. I went through two quivers before one of the Kravens broke through the line of guards. Hitting the wall, its clawed hand dug into the stone, gaining purchase. For the briefest heartbeat, I stood transfixed as it tore its hand free and then slammed it down again, higher, pulling itself up the wall.
My gods, I whispered. The craven let out a screeching wail, tearing me out of my stupor. I took aim, firing the arrow directly down into its skull. The impact knocked it off the wall. A shout to my right jerked my head around. An archer fell forward, bow slipping from his hands, as a craven gripped him by the shoulders, sinking its jagged teeth into the guard's neck. Good gods, they had reached the top. Spinning around, I knocked an arrow and quickly let it go. The arrow didn't deliver a fatal blow, but the impact knocked the craven free from the guard, sending it back to the ground below. It wasn't the only one that fell. The guard tumbled backward into nothing but air. I swallowed a cry, telling myself that the man was already dead before the loud, fleshy smack caused me to briefly squeeze my eyes shut. The craven's minds may be rotted, but they had enough sense to go for the archers. Victor had once said that the only thing that rivaled their thirst for blood was their survival instincts. A high-pitched scream jolted me into action. To my right, another craven had reached the edge of the rise, seizing an archer. The guard dropped his bow and embraced the craven, pushing forward. He fell to the ground outside the rise, taking the craven with him. A round of fiery arrows lifted once more into the air, reaching high above the wall. They came down, striking mortal and monster alike. Over the sound of unearthly howls and screams, hooves pounded off cobblestone and dirt. But I still stared at where the archer had fallen, his body swarmed by craven. The guard had sacrificed himself. This unnamed, unknown man had chosen death over allowing the craven to reach the other side of the rise. Blinking back sudden tears, I gave a wordless shake of my head as battle cries erupted, forcing me into motion. Rising just enough to see over the ledge, I looked over my shoulder as more guards on horseback spilled out from the gate, brandishing sickle blades. They split into two directions, attempting to seal off access to the rise. As soon as they cleared the entrance, the gates closed behind them. A craven launched itself at a guard, powering through the air like a large jungle cat would. It slammed into the ground, throwing him from his horse. They hit the ground. Damn it, I hissed, taking aim at the craven, who was now halfway up the rise. I caught him at the top of his patchy-haired skull, knocking him from the wall. I quickly knocked another arrow, searching out the craven who were at the rise. They were the clear threat. It quickly became obvious that these craven were different. They looked less monstrous. Still, their appearance was nothing short of nightmare fodder, but their faces were less hollow, their bodies less shriveled. Were they newly turned? Possible. The battle below was lessening, bodies falling on top of one another. Catching sight of Victor as he thrust his sword through the head of a fallen craven, I dropped down to one knee so I could peer over the wall. The cloak parted, exposing nearly the entire length of my leg from my calf to my thigh to the chilled air. There was only a handful of craven remaining, half of them feeding on and tearing into wounded guards, unaware of anything around them. I could see no more near the rise. Setting an arrow against the bow, I took aim at one who had torn through armor and into the cavity of a stomach, exposing thick, ropey innards. Bile clogged my throat. The guard was already dead, but I couldn't let the craven continue desecrating the fallen man. Focusing on the blood and gore,